All right, I think we're going to start. Good morning, brave souls who showed up here at 9:30 in the morning. I didn't think anybody was going to come, so thank you. Man, when they told me I was on 9:30 after daylight savings time, I thought, oh man. So, but thank you guys for showing up. So welcome to this morning's presentation on the Hispanic Persona Project. So good morning. Buenos dias. My name is Jose Villa. I am the president of an ad agency called Census. We basically are an ad agency that does integrated digital traditional advertising in sort of in a cross-cultural world, as we describe it. So we do a lot of multicultural advertising. Our agency was basically sort of created around the idea that there's sort of two big forces sort of changing the marketing communications world. Basically, the increasingly diverse population in the United States, and the impact of digital sort of technology on the way that we all interact with each other and brands and companies. So our sort of motto is that sort of culture changes everything, and it's a big part of what I'll be talking about today with the Hispanic Persona Project. First kind of question I just wanted to kind of get out there, how many of you would sort of describe yourselves as professionals working in the Hispanic market or have worked there in the past? So looks like a good half of you, good. So. For the other half of you, hopefully this will be an interesting primer as well on, I mean, for those of you who've worked in the space before, I think this is a little different approach to looking at Hispanics. For those of you who've never worked in Hispanic marketing, I think this will be interesting little, almost like a focus group session to get kind of some direct access to kind of the way that the consumer thinks and approaches specifically the web. So the hashtag we're using for the presentation is HisPersona. So be looking out for you guys' tweets on it. And basically what I wanted to walk you guys through today is a little bit about the sort of the reason why we did this report. And essentially what I'm going to be presenting today is a research project that our company undertook last year, looking at a different way of approaching the Hispanic market. And the reason why we did this, I'll talk about to start with. And then I'll kind of give a brief overview of personas. I'm sure a lot of you are very familiar with personas, but for those of you that are not, we'll touch on that briefly. And then we'll spend the majority of the time just kind of going through the personas. And my goal today is to kind of introduce you to them and sort of so that you have a feeling like you understand who these people are. And at the end, I want this to be an interactive session, so I kind of wanted to ask you guys how you want to talk about these personas and how you want to apply them, because there's a lot of different routes that we can take with the use of this new tool. And then we should have plenty of time at the end for discussion and dialogue and to let you guys get on to the next session. So the premise, the reason why we undertook this project, and one of the main reasons that you know we sort of exist as an organization, is that we feel that Hispanic marketing is dying. And that's a you know that's a bold statement, but we think that the business of marketing to Hispanics is starting to change and will radically change in the near future. Now, you know, this might sound like contradictory to everything that you've been hearing, especially with the census data that just came out, because the Hispanic population is growing at a rapid pace. I mean, it is far outpacing the general market in terms of a population growth. I mean, this is just kind of, you know, the hockey stick graph that's from the census, and you know, the big number last year was 50 million. We have more than 50 million Hispanics in the United States. It's a 43% increase. If you compare that to the non-Hispanic white population, they had a single-digit increase in population. And, you know, Hispanics now comprise the single largest minority in the United States, 16% of the entire U.S. population. And more than just it's at 50 million, it's going to continue to grow, and for reasons that have to do with the demographics of the Hispanic population. 23% of children in the United States right now are Hispanic. And 25% of the entire U.S. population by 2050 will be Hispanic. So it's a growing market. Why would I be talking about it dying? But it's because it's changing just as rapidly as it's growing. And I blog about this a lot, and I've talked about this idea that the number 63 is more important than the number 50. Everybody gets caught up in the idea that there's 50 million Hispanics in the United States, and that's big and that's important. But I would argue that more important than that is the fact that 63% of the Hispanics in the United States were born here, right? And that's a fundamental shift in the makeup of the population, because we're no longer talking about a population of largely immigrants that came here from another country. We're talking, it's quickly becoming a group of of consumers of that are defined as an ethnic group as opposed to a group of immigrants. And that's a real big change in at least the way that the Hispanic market has looked historically. And you know, people have been marketing to Hispanics for since the early 60s, arguably since the late 50s, and this is a monumental shift in thinking about this market. And for those of you that have worked in the space of Hispanic marketing, you know this model. It's the sort of the acculturation language model, and it's sort of the basis by which all of us who've worked in Hispanic marketing, this is like the basic tool that we all use when talking to our clients and working with them and looking at the market. We always segment it into this sort of real basic model that has worked for the most part for the last 50 years. You basically half the population is unacculturated, recent immigrants who primarily speak Spanish. About 30% are partially acculturated. They kind of go back and forth between both languages. They are bilingual. They usually are folks that have been here for a long time or are second generation. And then you have a small group of second, third generations that are completely acculturated, primarily speak English. And this has been the way that we've looked at Hispanic marketing for a very long time. But unfortunately, this model is going to be flipped on its head, and it's starting to be flipped on its head, because of the number that I talked about earlier, 63%. We're no longer, the majority of the Hispanics in this country are going to be in that second, third generation, acculturated English dominance. I'm sorry, there was a little typo there. So this whole model is being flipped on its head. And it's only going to change, and this sort of move towards a new Hispanic market is only accelerating. If you look at the U.S. Population of non-Hispanic whites, you compare it to the Hispanic population in terms of age distribution, you can see kind of what the future holds, right? I mean, the majority of the Hispanic population is young. It's under 30. So as we move forward, and the majority of the non-Hispanic white population are boomers, and they're getting older. So what's going to happen in the next 10 to 20 years? So Hispanic population is huge, it's growing, but the old models don't work. So we have to figure something out, right? Because this is just too big of a segment of the population. We can't ignore it. I think everybody understands that you have to figure this market out if you're going to be relevant. Whether you're a government agency, you're a Fortune 500, you're a nonprofit, you've got to figure out the Hispanic market. So what are we to do? We can't use that old model. We can either use or create some new model, and that's essentially that's essentially the idea behind the Hispanic Persona Project. And that's why we undertook it, and that's what I'd like to walk you through today. So personas, how many of you have worked with personas in some shape or form? So good, a few of you. So I'll give you a quick, sorry, this will be a little remedial for some of you, but I'll walk you through kind of a little background on personas and what they are and how they've been used. So what are personas? So they're basically archetypal users. We basically create these fictitious people, and we give them a variety of characteristics, and they're designed primarily to help us sort of remove the subjectivity from thinking about our target user. They're based on this idea of ethnographic research, which is sitting down with individuals on a one-to-one basis and observing their behavior. And behavior is a really important component of this, so keep that in mind. So they really emphasize behavior, motivations, and mindsets. We're talking less about demographics here, and we're talking about how people act and how they behave. And the background on personas, they've been around for a while. We obviously have been building on a lot of smart people's work in this area, and they actually started in the world of software development, software design, and sort of the gurus and pioneers in the space of developing personas is Cooper. And basically Cooper still, they're still at it and designing amazing personas. They sort of came into being in the late 90s, basically when there was a shift in the way that software was developed from being sort of architect-driven and sort of tech-driven, the developers deciding how an application looks and feels, to figuring out a different way to design and develop applications based on what users need. What are users' behavior, how they understand a system works. So it started in the world of software development, and then as the web took over and started to become more and more prominent, a lot of design and digital agencies started using personas as kind of a basic building block to design websites. So they went from software development into website design and have now started to kind of enter into other areas of marketing and communication. So So how do we create them? As I mentioned, we basically sit down with users and we create scenarios and we observe how they interact in these different scenarios. And they get presented as real people. We try to make them as real as possible because the more real they are and the more texture that they have to them, the better a tool they are for us in developing websites or other applications. And so they're presented as real people with sort of behavior patterns, skills, attitudes, their environment. We try to kind of paint an entire picture of these individuals. So why use his personas for the Hispanic market? Why even use this model of, you know, the various models that are out there as a way to try to figure out this new and this changing Hispanic consumer? Well, we thought that the idea of behavior and mindsets was a really powerful way to start to think about this market as opposed to demographics. Again, as I showed you earlier with the sort of acculturation model, most Hispanic marketing has been based on, and most of the communications to Hispanics has been based on their acculturation level, you know, and the language that they speak. But as Hispanics increasingly are not defined by the language that they speak and acculturate more and become part of, sort of integrate more into society, we can't use those really simplistic models. We've got to figure out a different way. Are there other things that are different about Hispanics that we could use to understand them better and to develop ways of connecting with them that are more appropriate? So they provide a different sort of a different perspective that we thought was an interesting thought exercise to undertake. And what we really found, particularly as sort of digital marketers, what we've really found compelling about the idea of using personas to think about the Hispanic market is that we started to shift from thinking about Hispanics as consumers, and I would argue that most marketers still think about sort of the population as consumers, these sort of passive groups of individuals, to this idea of a user, right? And this goes back to where personas came from as a software development tool, somebody who's actually interacting with you. And, you know, we're thinking now differently about the person that we are, that we're going to be marketing to, that we're going to be engaging with. We're thinking about them in a different sort of mental framework. We're thinking about them as an engaged individual. They're participating with us. They're in an interactive environment. We have to provide them utility, as opposed to kind of the old way of thinking about consumers. You know, broadcast kind of very passive person who's just sitting in front of a TV screen listening to your message and they have no choice. We all kind of know that that's not the world we live in anymore. So personas are, I think, a better tool to think about individuals and really describe them as users as opposed to consumers. And we decided to kind of add a twist to the sort of traditional persona and add in some additional texture that's not what you would typically see in a persona, but kind of help map them to the way that most of us think about the Hispanic market, right? I mean, there's a lot of people that have been marketing to Hispanics for a long time, so we didn't want to create something that was completely disconnected from the sort of the mental model that most of us have about the Hispanic market. So we added in psychographic details, we added in some demographic information so that we could kind of start to map it back to the original sort of acculturation model so that we can kind of understand, okay, how does this fit or not fit into the way that we've always thought about Hispanics? So I'd like to introduce you to the four personas. And we basically, so just to kind of a little bit of background on the research and kind of the approach we took. So essentially we undertook a set of 60 ethnographic interviews with Hispanics across the country. The way that we designed the study was that we wanted the participants that were in the ethnographic interviews to sort of be a representative sample of the Hispanic population across three variables, acculturation, age, and national origin, right? So we wanted to make sure that roughly 60% of the participants were of Mexican background, which is, you know, basically maps directly to the population of the Hispanic market in the U.S. In terms of age distribution, you saw that age distribution earlier, and acculturation, right? We wanted this to map roughly to that acculturation model. Now, one big caveat with these things, we've had this out in the market for a little while. These personas were not developed for a company and organization to just take them and use them as a way of understanding their Hispanic consumer. They were designed as a different way of thinking about Hispanics and as sort of a thought exercise for you to maybe consider developing personas for your organization, for your brand, et cetera. So they're not meant to be taken literally and just applied in action with your company or your organization. So the first persona that I want to introduce you to is we call him Ivan. He's the we call him the tech influential. So, you know, his quote, we always have a quote for all of the personas, is, I'm always online, I'm always connected. And I wanted to share with you a quick little video to kind of introduce you to him and kind of what his typical day looks like.
I can definitely walk in through my...
Sorry, this bring this over. So this is Ivan, the tech influential.
Online routine. Usually in the morning, first thing I do is wake up to my alarm clock, which is on my iPhone. After that, I usually catch the metro to work. So what I do is I plug my earphones in, set up my Pandora app, listen to music, and open one or two apps related to news. And it's usually USA Today, and I just read the top headlines of the day. After that, I go to work, check my inbox, and then browse a couple of blogs here and there, usually the TechCrunch or Mashable, which are related to my industry. Once I'm done with work, I go back in the metro, pop my Pandora once again, and from there, once I get home, I usually jump in my PC, do my online shopping if I have to, or do some online billing, which is pay my utility bills, check my bank account, and again, just make sure my alarm clock is turned on for the next day, on my iPhone, of course.
So that's a little picture of Ivan. This again. All right, so this is a little bit more of an in-depth view of Ivan, who we just met. So we give a little bit of texture on sort of who he is from a psychographic perspective, his age, he's 27, culturation levels mid to high. He's basically an early adopter of technology. He's the person who gets that new device when it comes out. He spends a ton of time online. He is the person that, you know, his friends and family come to for information about new products, new technology, because he's always on the forefront of it. He's always testing these things out. He's the classic early adopter. Now, the interesting thing about Ivan is that he's not always acculturated. He is, and there's a lot of other data out there that shows that a lot of these tech influentials are unacculturated Hispanics. Who are heavy users of new technology, the first ones to jump on board. And then these boxes here kind of give you a sense of some of the sites that he would visit. On the upper left-hand side, get a sense of kind of what his day looks like.
Wait, when you say
acculturation has to do more than just the language that they speak, and also how integrated they are into American society, right? Do they... Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, I mean, the definition of acculturation is different. Yeah, you can say that the mainstream in Miami is Hispanic, right? It's kind of what you're getting to. Absolutely. And so, you know, the reality of a mainstream society in Miami is a little different than it would be in Des Moines, Iowa, right? It's a different market, and that's absolutely true. But even within those markets, and, you know, like I live in LA, and there are parts of LA where you have a lot of recent immigrants who have not integrated into sort of the broader society, as, you know, politicians will describe it, or a lot of organizations will look at, you know, are they speaking English completely? Are their kids prepared to go to schools? Are they completely integrated into society in a way? Are they living with other folks that are not? Because a lot of times you get, you know, concentrations of Hispanics in certain areas, particularly recent immigrants in certain pockets of a city. No, please, we have time. So. Sure. Yeah, some of these tech, you know, from our interviews and just some of the texture that we saw, and again, these are not quant studies; these are more qualitative. We did see a lot of them are recent immigrants who stay very, very connected to home country because of the technology, right? So they're such heavy Facebook users. They're online all the time that in many ways they haven't disconnected from home country because the technology has allowed them to stay very connected. Whereas, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, that's another way that acculturation is looked at, is like how tied are you to home country versus how tied you are into sort of American society. Are you still primarily watching the soccer games in Mexico, or are you starting to watch MLS in the US, right? Like that's, I mean, it's a simple way to describe it, but yeah. So sites that he spends a lot of time on, some of the e-commerce environments that you might see him in the upper right, on the bottom left, some of the places where he gets media like news and entertainment content, and then a lot of the communications and sort of functional apps that he would use in terms of, you know, online banking. He's a heavy online banker. He's basically taken his whole world and put it on online. He's gone completely paperless in terms of his billing. This is the kind of, like, if you're a utility or you're a financial services company, this is the Hispanic consumer that you really want to target, because they're not going to be calling your call center. They're going to be sending you emails. They're going to be interacting with you on Twitter. These are sort of high-level tech users. And so how do we reach them? Now, the interesting thing about this particular sort of group, this persona, is that you can't depend on Spanish language media to reach them, right? Because they're not spending a ton of time on Spanish language media, as you can see on some of the entertainment sites. They're on more sort of mainstream sites. So you have to identify certain elements of what they're doing online that sort of would tag them as Hispanic, and then use things like behavioral targeting to find them other places across the web. So that is Yvonne, the tech influential. The second persona is Sandra. We call her the social techie. And this quote, I think, is kind of describes what motivates her and kind of what drives her online. I like to know what my friends are up to all the time. So I'd like to introduce you to Sandra.
I usually wake up in the morning. I check my personal email, go on Facebook, see if there's anything new. Usually try to send birthday wishes in the morning before I forget. I get to work, check my work email, personal email again, just in case I missed anything. And I stay connected on IM throughout the day, just in case there's anything from work, you know, someone sends me, or, you know, someone happens to jump on online from my friends and I can kind of chat with them quickly at work, maybe, you know, keep up to speed with what's happening for the weekend or throughout the day. You know, before, when on my way home, I ride the metro, so I usually, you know, read on my tablet. I have Wi-Fi on it, so I'm able to even check Facebook again, see if there's anything that comes up while I'm commuting at home or maybe catching up to friends. On the weekends, usually I look at different sales, or if I'm going out to a restaurant, or I usually check Yelp to see if there's anything, you know, if there's a coupon that's being offered on there or on another website, and also checking the ratings so that way I can know, you know, where to go for the weekend, what's the hottest place. And then finally, usually, you know, towards my end of the day, you know, I check again one more time, you know, Twitter or Facebook, just to make sure that I didn't miss anything before I go to bed.
So as you can see, a lot of what sort of the drives her behavior is sort of being in the know and being connected with her friends, her family. This is a major sort of behavioral driver. So a little bit more on, and this is not the social techie, this is social techie, so this is Sandra. So age 33, acculturation level sort of in the middle. Again, these personas are not really perfectly tied to acculturation models, but just to kind of give you a sense of who they are. She wants to be sort of the first knower. She wants to be the first follower. She's a little different than the tech influential. She's not going to be the person who gets to be the first one in her sort of social circle to get the new iPad first, right? That's not who she is, but she will be the first follower. She will be the person who you know, gets that once it becomes a little bit more mainstream. But she really is online quite a bit, and it's about social interactions, and it's about being aware of what's going on. She doesn't want to miss the thread of conversations that are occurring. If something, you know, scandalous happens with a friend, she's going to be, you know, talking about it. She's going to be on top of it. She's going to be sharing it. A colleague of mine, Gio, who was speaking yesterday, he has this great video. He talks about sort of how Hispanics were the original sort of retweeters, or, you know, with chisme and sharing information and retweeting. I mean, this is behavior that we've seen that it's very typical of a lot of us Hispanics, but really migrated perfectly into these online environments and these social networks. So some of the, on the bottom, you can kind of see some sort of cloud statements that kind of, some of the behavioral drivers, popularity. Everyone is doing it, being heard, staying in touch. No, that's, I mean, that's just, it was just sort of an analogy that was, I thought was pretty clever in terms of, you know, the idea of, for those of us who are Hispanic, we all know about how information and sort of rumors move quickly through, and, you know, one person shares it with another and calls fulanita, and then before you know it, you know, the story gets everywhere. This, you know, retweeting is essentially the same thing. You know, somebody starts something and then sort of retweets it, and then it just, you know, it goes on. And so there's this sort of Hispanic innate behavior that sort of, you know, maps very perfectly to what we see in social networks like on Twitter. So again, just to give you a sense of like what she does online, where she spends her time, in terms of not surprisingly, heavy Facebook user. Spending a lot of time, you know, she's reading reviews, she's sharing information around reviews with her friends, you know, sharing photos. This is all about the social nature of this particular group. Pretty heavy. From our interviews, we got a sense that this is a heavier e-commerce shopper in terms of the four personas that you'll see today. This is the one who will shop online a lot. I mean, some, you can divide this group into sort of two subgroups, one that spends a lot of time online, sort of comparison shopping and getting information before going in-store, and then a group that's just a heavy online shopper, and one that's using a lot of the most sort of the newest online e-commerce type platforms. Pretty similar to the tech influential in terms of the news and media sites that you'll find her on, although you start to see some of the Spanish language and ethnic media sort of pop up here a little bit more. So she will be on Univision. She might be watching a telenovela online a little more than you would see with the tech influential. So some of that behavior is a little bit more what you would think about a typical Hispanic consumer. And, you know, we'll use online tools. We'll use, bill pays and online banking tools, but not has completely migrated to sort of a complete online environment as you would see with the tech influential Yvonne earlier. So how do we reach her? She's on social networks all the time. So reaching her, I mean, Facebook would be the first place to start because she's just there all the time. Online video ads, this is a group that is consuming quite a bit of rich content, so, you know, we'll be more open to, you know, 10, 15 second pre-rolls, things like that, online video. The third persona is, we're calling her the nostalgic newbie, or Mariana. And just to kind of give you a quote to kind of introduce you to her, the web allows me to stay in touch with family and friends in Mexico and adapt to life in the U.S. So this is sort of the audience that's sort of a little bit newer to the web, but I'm starting to use it quite a bit. And let me introduce you to the nostalgic newbie.
My online routine in the day starts when I arrive to the office. I basically turn my computer to check for any new emails. And then I just check my email account before I arrive to my house. It's just when I leave the office. And any more than that, I also use my computer probably when I arrive to my house to see to visit this website who carries the results for the Mexican soccer teams. It's called mediotiempo.com. And that's basically the use I have, and that's my daily online routine, I think.
So the nostalgic newbie, I mean, one of the things that you noticed there, and I think it was really important to think about that this particular persona, was that comment he made at the end about going online to visit sites where he's still very connected to his home country, Mexican soccer. This is a lot of his online activity is starting to be about getting information that he might have gotten from La Opinión. You know, this is an LA resident who would have normally checked these soccer scores previously on a printed newspaper, is now using the web as a way to connect to this information. So a little bit more of information on the nostalgic newbie. So Mariana, it could be male or female, though the interview was obviously male. But her culturation level is a little bit lower on average. So a lot of these folks are more Spanish dominant or bilingual, if we want to think about them that way. So they're sort of a first, they're sort of an entry level user, right? So they haven't been on the web a ton of time. From our interviews, they've been using the web on a regular basis for a couple years, anywhere from 1 to 3, 4 years. So these are not power users. These are not people that are sophisticated, have a ton of experience using more advanced sites. They're still kind of feeling their way around the web, using it a lot. I mean, they've been online now for a couple of years, but they don't have the 10 years of experience that a lot of the sort of mainstream users you would see have. They're still exploring the capabilities of the internet, so it's kind of like a brave new world for them. They're very excited about talking to some of the folks. It was almost like every day they discover something new. Like, wow, I can use this tool, or I can connect with so and so. So there's a lot of new experiences. It's a very exciting place for them to be online. And again, to just give you a sense of some of the online behavior, we didn't see a lot of different sites and activities. This is again a newer user, so you're not going to see 20 different examples of e-commerce sites or social networks. They are using Facebook. But they're sort of viewers. They're very passive on Facebook. You're not going to see a ton of commenting or putting a lot of updates. They might like people. They might like a comment here or there, but they're not really. They're very passive on a lot of the social networks. They're actually across the board. So each of the personas, I wanted to kind of give you an idea of how they map to the acculturation model. It's not perfect because we were trying to basically move away from the acculturation model. But just to kind of give you a map. So this would be a less acculturated on average. But we saw some people that fit more acculturated in this. Older Hispanics who have been here a long time and we would describe as partially acculturated, if not maybe completely acculturated, who fit into this group because of their behavior. And that's, again, we're focusing on behavior, not demographics. So, looking at the sites that they visit, very ethnic skewed, very sort of in language. So they're, the sites that you would expect, Univision, Terra, Telemundo, but we start to see a lot more foreign sites from home country. So this is the group that is going, reading the newspaper from their hometown, from their country of origin. They're doing a lot of foreign sort of website browsing. As the interviewee showed you, he's checking soccer scores from Mexico on a Mexican website. They're not really using a lot of online tools. They have not sort of digitized their life in any way. They're using email, basic email. These are your typical sort of Hotmail users. They're probably not on Gmail, and they're really not they're not paying their bills online. They're definitely not banking online. And so, how do we reach the nostalgic newbie? Spanish language portals and then sort of long tail websites. A lot of these smaller, particularly foreign websites, where you can sort of target them based on IP address. So they're visiting El Universal, but we know that they're in California or they're in Florida, and so we can sort of target them that way. And the last persona is the utilitarian explorer. We call him Armando. So I think it's his quote here, and kind of to introduce you to him, is, I think it's important to have a balance and not spend too much time online. So let me introduce you to him.
Yes, I use my prepaid smartphone daily. I don't own a computer or a laptop, so I use my phone every day, primarily for text messaging, for making phone calls, checking voicemail, different social networking sites, and look up any information that I need to on a daily basis.
So the utilitarian explorer, Armando. So a little bit about him. He's in his 40s, maybe his 50s. A little bit older, one of the older groups, but kind of in the middle. Acculturation level anywhere from mid to a very acculturated, as you saw from the interview. And this is a person who's online to basically do very specific tasks. They're not spending a ton of time online. It's, you know, the name really describes it. It's very utilitarian. I need to search for something, so I will go online and I will find that, and then I will leave. I will not spend a ton of time. I'm not connecting with people. I'm not using it as a new social tool to make relationships. I'm there. I need to find the address for the hardware store, so I'm going to go online. I'm going to get that information. I'm going to leave. A lot of the folks that we interviewed were, some of them were, sort of in terms of socioeconomics, were pretty high up socially, economically, right? Some of them were very educated, some of them were doing very well. Speak Spanish and English, were bilingual, but just were not heavy users of online. You know, they're there to take care of the things they need to do. If they're in an office working environment, they're using the web as a research tool primarily. If they're not, and some of the less acculturated sort of utilitarian explorers were using their mobile devices, using the same kind of behavior, like to find very sort of utilitarian information, to just get information, addresses, etc. And to give you kind of a sense of some of the sites, you know, they're on Facebook a little bit. A lot of them were actually to watch their kids, so just to see what their kids were doing online. They're not really active participants. They'll go to YouTube to look at, like, do-it-yourself or sort of how-to videos, but they're not on YouTube a lot. They'll go on eBay and Amazon, you know, a lot, mostly research. These are not heavy e-commerce buyers.
Resistance is based on. Is the resistance based on? It almost seems like a value statement saying I think it's important to have a balance and not spend too much time online. Yeah. But underneath that, would you say it's intimidation, or what?
Yeah, it was like for some of the folks that we interviewed, it was almost like they saw it as a waste of time. Time suck. They're very practical. They're like, so I need to, you know, a lot of these, you know, working long hours. They have their life very compartmentalized, and they're not spending a lot of time dilly-dallying on the internet, right? So I guess that would be kind of a way to, I guess that's sort of the value behind it.
Right. One of my favorite factoids is that smartphone penetration amongst Latinos is double-digit more than general market.
Yeah.
And so I guess what I'm inferring is that's very much squeezed towards the younger end of the population.
Well, I would say a little differently. It's squeezed towards the sort of tech influential and social techie, right? Because they're the ones who are heavy users, but you've got this whole spectrum of Hispanics that are not. They don't fit that. When everyone says, "Oh, Hispanics are more social," and this is not the segment of the Hispanic population that is
right.
That fits that description.
It's not monolithic.
Yeah, yeah.
Got it.
So some of the sites, you know, you might see him on a sports site, or probably U.S.-based sports sites. So they're looking at, you know, they might go into ESPN Deportes. Some of these individuals were bilingual, felt a little more comfortable in Spanish. But again, it's not the language that defines them. It's the amount of time and what they're doing online. This group tends to be more likely to use online tools, bill pay, signing up for different things that sort of simplify your life. Again, fits the sort of value proposition. They're using online for very practical reasons. So if I can save time by, signing up for access to my bank account online, I'll do it. But one interesting thing for organizations that are kind of in that space is this person really valued being able to just pick up the phone and call somebody and kind of found it annoying that, you know, some of them were sort of worried that if I go online, I just, again, it's like I want to get things done quickly. So if I need to call the bank, it's going to be a lot easier and a lot faster to call the bank if I have a question, et cetera. So that's the utilitarian explorer. So applying the persona. So, hopefully got a good sense of these four personas. And again, just wanted to reiterate, these are not, you know, I don't want you guys to run off and take these personas and, you know, make multi-million dollar decisions based on them. It's a way of thinking about this market. And obviously, for a particular organization, for a particular entity, you're going to be looking at a subset of Hispanics. You're probably going to want to create your own personas. So I wanted to talk a little bit about applying the persona, so I wanted to kind of see where you guys wanted to go with this. So there's a lot of, I mean, this is a broad topic. We can go in a lot of different directions. So, you know, how, you know, kind of wanted to see where you guys wanted to go in terms of how to apply the personas. So a couple of options, kind of choose your own adventure for the rest of the presentation. Do you want to talk about applying personas more broadly to the enterprise and organizations? A lot of organizations are starting to use personas beyond just, you know, marketing or to build websites. how to use personas to plan. You know, we can get more into the very popular use of personas, which is to develop websites and how to use them in that particular environment. We can think about kind of what these personas are going to look like in the future. There's an exercise we always go through with our clients where we sort of future cast. So that's what they look like right now, but what are your personas going to look like 2 years from now, 5 years from now? And we could talk about sort of differences between Hispanic and other personas. So we got two. You're voting for two. Twos? Who wants two? We got a few. Who wants one? Not too many. Who wants three? Ooh, three. Three and two. Four? A couple fours. So I think we're between three and two. So I think we have time to do both. So we'll jump ahead. So using personas to guide owned media. So again, this is the very traditional application of personas. Again, where they came from was to develop, you use them in developing interfaces for software and then for websites. So think about, okay, so now we're thinking about, okay, we've got these personas, and now we're going to figure out how to use them to develop a website. We may be a company that's looking to develop a website, and your primary customer is Hispanics, right? So how do we think about that website? What's the interaction going to be on that website? It could also be a Facebook page. It could be a mobile app. You know, it's any kind of sort of environment, a platform that we're going to be developing. Now, the first thing you do with personas, so let's assume that you've created your personas and you've netted out maybe two or three personas, which is typical. You always identify a primary persona, right? So when you're designing environments, and if you've been to any, and I highly recommend that you go to some of the user experience sessions that are going on here, because you can really see how this is done. You identify one persona that is the most important persona, whether it represents the largest percentage of your target audience or customers, or it's the one that's most important to you from where you need to be in the future. You always identify one as your primary persona, and that's the one that you plan your experience around. So if we're developing a website, some of the things we'll start to think about is, for instance, information architecture. What types of information are we going to present on? If it's a website, how is the information going to be organized? The site map, the types of the sort of the breakdown of information categories. If we're looking at a particular, like for instance, if the nostalgic newbie is our target audience, is our primary persona, we're going to probably want to keep things fairly simple in terms of the information architecture of the site. Taxonomy is really important. So taxonomy talks about how we label things and the language that we use. So if you're in a highly complex industry, you're a utility company and you use a lot of engineering terminology, if your primary audience is the nostalgic newbie, you're going to really want to find out what is the language that particular user group uses and label your site the way that they think about it, not the way that you think about it or talk about it internally. So that's where taxonomy would come into play. Content strategy, so how is the content written on the site? And this is really important. This is something that's often ignored or done at the very last minute. What is the tone? How long is the content on a particular page? Again, understanding this particular primary persona, you know, they may have, if it's a utilitarian explorer, this is a low attention span, in and out, wants information quickly. You're going to want to chunk your information, kind of make it very very sort of finite and very simple. Not very wordy. And then sort of planning functionality. What type of, what type of features and functionality do you want to offer? If I'll use the nostalgic newbie, you know, if there's a lot of, this is the first time that they're using a site like yours, you may have a lot of frequently asked questions, tutorials, things like that, that are going to be important. So that's kind of how you would use the personas to kind of plan an experience. And you can kind of use that same sort of analogy I just gave to a Facebook page, or a Facebook tab, or a mobile application. So future casting personas. So there's a lot of information. I apologize for the text-heavy nature of this. This is not very good information architecture. But so I kind of wanted to give you a sense of some of the trends that we're seeing in the Hispanic market. So if we wanted to look at the personas that we created, right, of the entire Hispanic population, how might these personas look in a couple years from now, right? So some of the trends that we're seeing, right? So a younger population that is more acculturated. So remember that slide where I flipped over the acculturation model? So what's the result going to be on the personas that we just talked about? We're probably going to see more social techies and tech influentials, maybe even like a hybrid. There might end up being a new persona. One of them might go away, and the nostalgic newbie might go away, and you might end up having this third sort of hybrid you know, if the social techie and the tech influential had a baby, it would be this new persona. So, you know, that might be something that you might see in that environment, right? Geographically diverse market. If you've ever looked at one of those, like, Hispanic population heat maps, it kind of shows where the concentration of the Hispanic population. It's always been, you know, basically the Southwest and then a strip, you know, then you got South Florida and then a little strip in the Northeast, right, New York, and then kind of diminishes after there. If you look at those heat maps in the last couple years, it's all moving to the central part of the country in the South, right? So you've got this huge boom of population of Hispanics moving into traditionally non-Hispanic areas, places like Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, all these sort of Midwest states that there's not a lot of Hispanics there, so we're going to see a lot of Hispanics going in and being sort of in an environment where they're a little more disconnected from, you know, if you're Mexican and you move to, a part of Tennessee, you're probably not going to have the same sort of support system and Mexican supermarkets and a lot of the sort of, you know, environments that you might have compared to if you moved into East LA, right? So we might see more nostalgic newbie motivations from these types of consumers because they're really missing home country and they're going online to find those things that if they lived in a traditionally Hispanic market, they might be able to get offline, right? So that's one way to think about what might happen there. A group of consumers that are spending more and more time consuming digital media, and in many cases for the first time. So as more and more Hispanics are coming online, you're going to have more nostalgic newbies, right? So, you know, we might end up seeing, if your target is a particularly unacculturated group, we might see more and more novice behavior. And so we might need to start to think about how we plan environments and put a little more emphasis on the nostalgic newbie crowd. And then the last one here, as was brought up by one of the folks here just now, we see a lot of statistics and data showing that Hispanics are first movers on technology. They over-index on everything in terms of social behavior and using technology, and they're the first ones to get 4G devices, and they're the first ones to get a lot of these tablets and new technology. Well, if that trend continues, which seems to be a logical conclusion that we can make, you're probably going to end up seeing kind of a tech influential on steroids, right? That's like that persona that we just saw and just taking it to another level, right? This is the super, and you might start thinking about if you're a tech company, maybe this is an audience that you're going to really want to focus on, who's going to be the sort of influential, start telling lots of people about the new technology and being an evangelist for you. So it's kind of some thoughts on how you could sort of future cast, and this is always a really good exercise to go through because you're thinking about how things are going to evolve in the future. So we have 12 minutes. I can go into questions. We can go into the other scenarios. Whatever you guys would like to do. Questions?
Yeah. I was just wondering how much of the Hispanic market is seen as global due to the language thing. I mean, Spanish being the second most used language in the world. Mm-hmm. Do you see overlap in the markets in a global space?
Well, the perspective that I would have would be from what I get from clients, right? And I'm seeing more and more clients want to look at the market sort of a pan-Hispanic market because of digital, right? You can do that, so you can start to think about, okay, is this, I'm going to be reaching a Mexican consumer in the U.S. as well as a Mexican consumer in Mexico, and they want to start to think about that. And I've seen, it's anecdotal. I don't have any data to support that is an effective way of looking at the market. I mean, we are always very careful when clients approach us with that kind of a sort of a thesis in terms of how they want to go after the Hispanic market. They want to look at the entire Spanish-speaking world. It's a very diverse world, right? So, I mean, a Spaniard living in Spain is very different from, you know, a Mexican living in, you know, the EFE versus, you know, a Mexican living in North Carolina. So it's, you know, you could do it. Obviously, language is something that's shared, but, you know, I always caution. Our first instinct is caution, because it is, you don't want to sort of group people in ways. And this whole exercise was about thinking about Hispanics in different ways. Maybe there are ways to look at behavior that's consistent across countries, and you could create sort of cross country personas. That would be an interesting exercise. So,
hi. Didn't mean to blow out your ears. How does this change, or does it change at all, for nonprofits? I work in a public library in Tucson. Obviously, we're a really heavy Hispanic population.
Your question was, how does this change the...
How How can nonprofits use these personas in what we're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And how would it change from the advertising world, from the profit world?
Yeah, yeah. So I guess what I would tell folks in the nonprofit world is I think this is, well, for one, if the Hispanic market is an important constituent for your nonprofit, that this is arguably a less expensive sort of research tool than the way that most research is done in sort of the for-profit world, which is really expensive focus groups, really expensive quant studies. This can be done a lot cheaper, and I think with still pretty effective results is a good way to think about it. So, you know, if you're in Tucson and you're reaching out to, you know, obviously you've got a primarily Hispanic community there, you know, sitting down and doing some ethnographic interviews with, you know, you probably understand pretty well what the Hispanic, you know, sort of your Hispanic constituency looks like. Doing some ethnographic interviews, sitting down with them, understanding them, and thinking about them using this model, right? Create your own personas. And you can do it probably with your own staff. And there's a lot of literature online that you can sort of be guided through the process of creating these. And you know, like anything, you become more comfortable in it. You can sort of iterate on these and add more texture over time. So that's what I would suggest. So.
I find the personas very interesting because I work with, I am a Kenyan living in the U.S., and it's interesting as you talk about those personas, I can see a lot of immigrant sure. populations who really fit into that very yeah. well. And so I guess my question is, and I think you touched on it, do you possibly see within certain populations, for example, you know, immigrants living in the U.S., since personas are based more on behaviors than language, do you see some application across the board that you could kind of generalize?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, and I would say yes, absolutely. I think you could very easily create sort of like an immigrant persona, right, that has behavior. We saw the nostalgic newbie. You could basically, I mean, I would assume that nostalgic newbie behavior would apply across a variety of sort of immigrant populations, whether they're from Africa, from Europe, from anywhere in the world. Obviously, there's a lot of behavior and motivations. You know, I guess when you start to think about the motivations and why, I mean, somebody asked me the question of like, why does this, what's the underlying motivation behind the utilitarian explorer not wanting to spend a lot of time online? You know, that would be the interesting thing to figure out is like whether these, you know, whether immigrants from certain parts of the world are, you know, yes, they're connecting to home country and they're using the web for that, but maybe there's some other, you know, maybe they're adapting to U.S. life quicker than other groups, and you know there might be some different behavior there. But yeah, I could definitely see almost creating a whole subset of nostalgic newbies across sort of, you know, immigrant groups.
Personas, I'm sorry. Your personas kind of highlight the original tagline that you said about marketing for Hispanics is sort of dying, right? What would you say the difference with these four personas is to four personas that I can create for the general market? I mean, just besides the Hispanic name that you have given them and watching Univision instead of ABC, I can put an American name to those four personas and move them to be general market. So are you saying that then the only difference is whether I want to speak to them in Spanish versus English, or are there specific ways that I can use these personas to target them as a Hispanic audience rather than general market?
Yeah, good question, and that's actually what question number four was about, which is, you know, how are these different from, you know, if you have a lot of, for instance, we find ourselves in a situation a lot where a client already has personas, and they might even have a persona that has a Hispanic name, and they've said, well, this is our Hispanic persona. So there's a lot of different ways to look at it. I mean, you could create a separate set of personas for the Hispanic market, so you can kind of create like a subset. And say, you know, this within this particular group, this is where most of our Hispanics lie, and this is the behavior. You know, in its most fundamental sense, personas should cross ethnic groups, right? It shouldn't matter. You typically give a name and a profile to the based on who tends to sort of what that particular group tends to look like. So if it's, I mean, again, it's not a quant tool. It's not like the traditional segmentation models that you would use. But for the most part, if you identify that one of your personas is primarily Hispanic, you will probably give that persona is a Hispanic name. You know, you would fill the texture in as a Hispanic because that is primarily who we're talking to. So that would be in the context of like, you know, across the board, all consumer, all user personas. However, if you're an organization that has a lot of emphasis on the Hispanic market, I would suggest considering creating sort of sub personas that are just specific to the Hispanic market, if that's important enough for you, which with 50 million, you know, very well could be for a lot of organizations. So.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay? There we go. Hi, I'm George. I created a medical Spanish software about 4 years ago, and we have over about 1 million users, and we've just partnered with a pharmaceutical company. I'm having a lot of difficulty showing them that Hispanics are in the forefront of technology. What material can you provide us? I mean, possibly maybe like something online that I could share with the pharmaceutical company just to help with our project and pushing more future projects with them.
Sure. Well, for one, you can download a copy of the report on the Persona Project. So you can get that online, HispanicPersonaProject.com. So feel free to go online. It's free. You get a copy of it. So you get more of the texture in the background. So, you know, that's one tool that you can use. There's a ton of data out there that is published. Sure, yeah, absolutely. but there's also, you know, eMarketer puts out a lot of information on the Hispanic market and sort of digital usage, ComScore. I mean, it seems like, you know, for those of us that work in the space, and it seems like every week there's another study that comes out that either says they're more social, they're more mobile. I mean, mobile particularly. I mean, actually, we're, just as another plug, we're actually, so this is one of our first research projects. We're actually going to be publishing a second research project that we've done on Hispanics and the use of mobile devices, specifically in a retail environment, but there's a lot of information in there. So that'll be coming out next month. So it's going to be called the Hispanic Mobile Project. And so we'll have a lot more texture on kind of how Hispanics are using mobile devices, and maybe that'll be helpful for you too. Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and the study I think you're talking about is the AOL Cyber Study. They do that every year. It's a great study. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
Mine's more of a methodology question, and I'm sorry if you already addressed it at the beginning. Did you guys do any virtual tag-alongs, or was it all face-to-face interviews and the things that you did? Did you actually observe any of their behaviors electronically in any way?
So we did. So we did a combination of phone. We basically did a combination of sort of virtual observations, which are not ideal. But because we wanted to get people from across the country, we had to do that just from a cost perspective. So we did some sort of like Skyping and interviewing. But then we also, the best ethnographic interviews are one-on-one. You're sitting with a person, and you're asking them in a very sort of conversational tone to do certain things. And you're observing their behavior. So it's the complete opposite of a focus group or where you're, or even a usability test. If you're in the web space, you probably heard that terminology. That's where you sit somebody in a lab and they're in front of a computer and they're doing tasks. That's not what those are very artificial. Where you really get the interesting information is when you're sitting down with the person and you're asking them, you know, very conversational, like, what are you doing today? Like, you know, walk me through. And you start to get the real behavior. Because people, if you're in market research, sounds like you might be, you know that people don't often portray their real behavior in these types of artificial environments. So the key is to create comfort and sort of conversational environment. And usually the person who does them, I mean, if you're going to invest a lot in this, usually have a user experience designer, somebody who is going to translate the behavior into the experience. So they're the ones actually conducting the interview. And that's really powerful, right? Because if that's the person who's going to plan out how the site's going to be structured. So they sat down and interviewed these users, and now they have a better understanding than anybody of how that site should be, you know, what the interaction should be, what the taxonomy, et cetera, et cetera. So. We did not. We did not. Now, but for that mobile project that we're going to be putting out, we actually did tag along. So we went in store with them, followed them as they were with real person. Yeah, we're real individuals. Yeah. So.
Of mobile transactions by Hispanics, like using their mobile phones as coupons or in some way using the QR reader, what anything.
So I'm not going to give away all of the results of the study, but I guess I'll give you one thing. Not a lot of sort of online, not a lot of mobile commerce, like buying things on their mobile device. Not surprising. Coupons, yes. Coupons is big. So I think I'm out of time. Thank you.